What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we're very excited to be back with you for another week of Chicago Film Conversation. First, we've got a great interview coming up here.
We do.
Looking forward to it. And we'll introduce him in a second. But there is some unfinished business.
Yeah.
As you might remember, we had a little bit of an Oscar bet for this year.
I'm trying to forget it, but it's pretty much... It's been dominating my entire week.
Yeah, which I would feel bad about, but...
That's what I get.
Yeah, that's what you get. If you didn't know, Connor and I had a little bet about who was going to pick the most Oscar winners out of a ballot, ballot from the New York Times, and we narrowed it down to about the 10 top categories. It's not to say that things like, you know, production design and, you know,
best
sound...
animated movie.
Sure, it's not saying they're not important, but we had to cut it off somewhere to make it a little bit more competitive. So,
and I just got destroyed.
Yeah.
Didn't I?
I think, would you like to announce the winner?
You want me? Oh, wow.
Yeah, please. You have to say it.
Well, the Oscar mayor of Gloatsville goes to Tom Hush for this year, obviously. And. And Tom, you truly are the best around.
Yeah,
I don't think that anybody would dispute that. Certainly, nobody in this room. However, maybe something that would hurt your reputation a little bit is the punishment that you have levied upon me for losing.
Oh yeah, I decided that Connor was going. And thank you to everybody who threw in a suggestion for what bad movie Connor was going to have to watch 7 times in a row.
Yeah,
over the course of a week, you're watching The Last Airbender, mm-hmm. the M. Night Shyamalan epic.
Yeah,
based on the very popular Nickelodeon television show. Now, let it be known, I love that television show. That
me
was
too.
A great show. Very well done. Fantastic work of animation.
Yeah.
However, the M. Night Shyamalan film leaves a little bit to be desired in that department.
It's baffling, honestly. That movie, I don't understand what, like, the choices that M. Night had. And I don't want to just outright say that I think it's a bad movie, but it's very difficult to watch one time. It's much more difficult to watch it 7 times in a row over the course of a week when you have other things that you want to be putting into your media diet.
Yeah.
Not to go too far into it, because we do have a couple great guests for this episode, but my main qualm with it is that M. Night said that he wanted to have martial artists to be his actors to portray the main characters from the show.
Yeah.
Because then they're, you know, when they're doing the, like, bending motions or whatever, because it is based off of, like, you know, it is based off of cultural aspects of, like, martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted that to be very authentic. But for some, like, they're still using wires. They're still using a ton of CGI. Why didn't they just hire, you know, regular actors for that? And then they could just teach them how to do it. I'll say this. The performances are not as compelling as they should have been for such a popular television show.
And you also mentioned to me when we were talking about this off the air that one of the things that stuck out to you is something that was a huge controversy at the time, which is the casting of white actors.
Yes.
as Asian characters, essentially. Like,
right.
The entire show is based off of a lot of different culture from Eastern countries. So naturally they decided to cast a white dude as, like, Sokka.
Sokka, yes.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to be, like, an Inuit style
mm-hmm.
character. But it's not very good. Dev Patel, I'll give a shout out to Dev Patel. He did a good job.
He does his best with
the
material.
He does his best, but it's still, you know, it's incredibly difficult to watch. And damn you, Tom, for making me do it.
Have you done all 7?
No, I've got one more to go.
One more to go.
Not included. I guess I have 2 more to go, because I have to do it today and tomorrow. And
St. Patrick's Day be damned.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it.
Stay in.
Stay in and watch Avatar.
Yeah.
That's the... maybe that's going to be the plan for today.
What better way to pay homage to the patron
Irish.
Saint of Ireland than watching
a bunch of Irish actors perform it?
Well, you're taking it like a good sport, you know. And there's always next year. There's always next year. But for now, I am the Oscar
Mayor Wiener of the Oscar ballot.
Yes. And who knows? You know, I might falter. I might totally lose the mojo.
For my sake, I really fucking hope so.
Yeah. All right. Enough of that. We're going to move into our interview for today. We are so lucky to be talking to a writer and director and also the producer of a film called Makeout Party. This is a short film that is... It's really hard to describe because it is so many fantastic things. It is a colorful look at a cast of characters going through a comedy of errors. It showcases so many fun, interesting filmmaking techniques, and also gives us a look, maybe not a look, but it gives us a work of art that spans so many different identities, whether it is sexual, gender-based, or racial. It is a veritable hodgepodge of fun and love and sincere, interesting comedy. And I gotta say, it had me grinning the entire time. What about you, Connor? You watched it as well.
Yes, I thought that my favorite part about it, being able to, you know, living in Chicago as we all do, everybody that lives in Chicago, my favorite part about it was just the surreality of the film, and then that intersecting with all of these intersections that I noticed, yeah. And all of these different like signs and like wall art and logos for different companies that that you guys all thanked at the very end, and that was just a nice little treat for me, I thought. It was an enjoyable experience all around.
So right now in studio, we have producer Eve Rydberg. She is the producer on Makeout Party. And on the phone from Los Angeles, from California, we have the writer and director, Emily Esperanza. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So let's get started with Makeout Party's very unique vision. The first thing, as I said, that struck me was the way everything looked. It's so colorful. It's a neon dream, and it covers so many different aesthetics and different types of it's so fashionable. I found myself looking at all the outfits. I'm like, man, I wish I could dress like that.
Well, you can, Tom.
I can.
And that's what this, if anything, that's what this movie proves.
It says you can be who you want to be. Now, Emily, you wrote and directed this. Tell us a little bit about what this was inspired by. What got the creative juices flowing for Makeout Party?
So what actually very literally inspired this film, I was at a thrift shop, and I was looking through some, like, robes, and I found this really funny pink bathrobe that on the back had, like, it was, I think, a Disney robe, but it had Cinderella and her prince, like, making out on the back. It was really, really weird. It was the last thing I expected to pull out when I pulled out this, like, silky, kind of weirdly colored robe, and this had this giant, like, image on the back, and I had this, like, vision of a tight shot starting on that robe and then pulling out, and there's someone wearing that robe who's making out, and as the shot widens, there's just more and more people making out with each other. And really, I was about to move to California, and I hadn't really told anyone yet, and I knew I really wanted to make a final film before leaving and have this experience and opportunity to collaborate with people I hadn't had a chance to yet, because the filmmaking community I was a part of and still am a part of in Chicago is kind of insular, but we're all so connected to these other groups of people, and there were a lot of artists whose work I really admired who I hadn't had an opportunity to work with yet. So it was kind of this excuse and chance to collaborate with a bunch of really, really rad artists and filmmakers and fashion designers and musicians and performers and all types of interesting creative before I left.
And the costuming and everything, the costuming and the work that must have gone into the production of this, you speak about the artists that you got to work with and everything. I mean, it must have been quite an undertaking. How long did it take? How long was, like, the production process, and how long did it take to get all of the actors dressed up in, like, all the crazy wardrobes and not, like, painting everybody's skin green and all of that? What was the process like for that?
We actually knocked it out pretty fast.
Yeah, pre-production was, like, I don't know, 6 weeks before we started. Yeah, so that was pretty quick. The green makeup was definitely an under that took a couple of hours. We had a special special effects makeup artist helping us with that. So that was good.
Yeah, but I mean, it all kind of came together really organically. Molly Hewitt, who helped do production design on the movie, we would like go to her house and have these kind of art making parties.
Yeah, it was a lot of like sitting around in living rooms, painting and creating things out of cardboard and
things together and.
Well, that just comes through in the total vibe of Make Out Party. It's so incredibly fun and loose and goofy, while still it's still revolutionary in a sense, because you're showing a lot of different characters that are so many different identities, and especially in terms of this kind of more fluid sexuality, where you have some characters who are kind of polyamorous, some that are you know, with both women, men, or any other gender in there. Can you tell us a little bit about why you felt it was important to make sure to be very inclusive with this very loving makeout party?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this kind of goes back to the writing process. So when I was writing the script, I wrote it so that the characters could really be played by anybody, regardless of gender or, you know, sexual preference or race. And it really was to give an opportunity for people to, you know, be able to step into roles that might not be available. But it was also just done because I really feel like so often actors or performers aren't allowed to have certain roles because that they might be perfect for because of some weird predetermined, like, you have to fit into this standard. So it was really cool because when casting, it was really just reaching out to friends or people whose work I admired, etc., to be like, you seem kind of perfect for this role. Would you like to try out for it? Are you interested in being in this project? So it kind of ties back to this openness to casting, to writing. I think it starts, you know, in development for sure.
And for as loving and fun and colorful and sugary the whole thing is, there are some really dark storylines that you tackle here. I mean, one of your characters gets kidnapped by a bunch of helium-sucking degenerates,
yeah,
I guess.
Greasers.
Alien greasers.
Alien greasers. And I mean, yeah, one of them gets kidnapped, and then there's, you know, obviously the cat calling, and then the person drinks. What was the juice that she drinks that she turns into the cat monster? Do you remember?
Pussycat Kill Kill.
Yeah. It's a potion, yeah.
And then, so for how dark everything was, and I mean, to a lesser extent, the character who gets, you know, the coffee spilled on her eggs, but for all the dark undertones, they all come together in the end. They're all at the same party together. What was the, I guess, what was the inspiration for having this kind of juxtaposition between having everything be extremely colorful and light in terms of aesthetic, but then thematically, it's pretty dark?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said about queering violence, mm-hmm. Where we usually perceive violence to be something with really high stakes, and not to say that this film doesn't have like some high stakes, but there's still this lightness to it, and like the knife, that Band-Aid box is confronted with in the alleyway is covered in duct tape and has fake blood painted on it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are ways of approaching, I guess, these high stakes in cinema that don't necessarily have to be rooted in tragedy or, I'm not sure. It's I think it's a complicated question.
Yeah, it seems to me that in Make Out Party, it's almost Three Stooges like in a sense, and that's not to make it seem like silly or dumb, but like well constructed. These are fun comedic beats. I really like that it is a comedy of errors that is relatable, and there's a great amount of setup and payoff to these jokes in a sense. So like you have one character gets kidnapped and she's stuck with this roving band of, you know, greaser aliens with green skin. Right. And then there's that great, you know, payoff where she fights back and she gets help. And they, I love the special effect where all their tongues are tied together. And I saw that and I was like, whoever did the special effects on this needs someone pay them.
That was Emily.
Emily, that was fantastic. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, that looks so real. It looks like that could actually be it. But I do want to commend Make Out Party for being something that does get a little, gets strange and weird, but brings it all back in this really loving package. I want to throw over to Eve here. As the producer, when you got, you know, this idea, you know, from Emily, she says, I want to make this Make Out Party. It's going to be colorful. It's going to be offbeat and it's going to be a lot of fun. How did you start tackling this?
I mean, we met and she was moving. I think maybe it was like 3 months out from her moving. And so she was like, you know, I want to get started on this soon. And it was kind of, you know, I could tell it was going to be a big undertaking, but the connections were already there. Like she said, it was this really organic sort of reaching out to people and just kind of trying to figure out how can we make this happen. And for me as a producer, it was really like, what are all the different areas that I can fill in? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was also kind of the AD. I also played a character in the movie. I play Bambi. And it was just sort of like, what does Emily need? And I'll just fill in wherever that is. So, you know, it was building sets and costumes and trying to figure out how to sort of organize it all and make it something that could happen, and it could happen in a short amount of time for virtually no money. Uh-huh. But I felt pretty confident in that because Emily and I both sort of work in this micro budget DIY, do it yourself. It was a lot of, you know, let's go to the thrift store, let's find the fabric that we have in our back room, and let's build this kind of out of nothing. And because of that, it was a really fun experience.
And it seems to me that sometimes the role of a film producer is something that folks don't always understand. They're not really sure what that does because everybody thinks, oh, the director tells everybody what to do. You know, the writer has the actual script. The cinematographer sets up, you know, has the camera, chooses the lenses. But producer is kind of this weird, amorphous thing where it's exactly as you described, where you're doing a little bit of everything to make it happen.
It's kind of like you're the wind beneath the wings of the project.
Right.
Like, what needs to happen? Let's make it happen.
Is this your first production, or have you produced before?
It's my first production for somebody else. I've produced some short films. I had a company called The Goodnight Ladies, and we produced a series of short films that we had written and directed. So this was sort of my first venture producing somebody else's work.
And what was that like? Taking Emily's initial idea and helping it come to fruition.
I mean, it was wonderful. It's been a fantastic experience. It was super interesting because Emily and I, when we started this project, didn't really know each other that well. And it's been sort of this like amazing journey of like making art and also like developing this really close bond and friendship and sort of figuring out like we speak sort of the same language, and that became really evident as we were working. And so it was sort of this amazing sort of development of like, oh, okay, like you really get me and I get what you're doing. And we were just sort of able to create this thing out of nothing.
It sounds like this team that you guys have together, it all works very well in this makeup party. Now to hear that it was also sort of like a going away party for Emily and for the team, do you guys have any more plans to maybe make another installment in this crazy world of Chicago that you've imagined for yourselves?
Possibly.
We have
collaborated on a couple things since. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that we've joked that it would make sort of, it's sort of like a live action cartoon in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we were joking that it would make maybe a good web series or something like that, but nothing like concrete, I wouldn't say.
Well, yeah. Think about it, guys.
Yeah.
It's not a bad
but
idea.
In terms of the world, that's very much Emily's she builds in this world of sort of fantastical archetypal characters and this, you know, intensely visual sort of thing. So I'm confident that there will be more projects down the line that will sort of live in this extended fantastical world.
Yeah, the makeout party cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Disney, it's waiting for you.
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh.
It's anti-Disney.
Anti-Disney.
Yeah. Emily, let's get into you as a filmmaker. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into working in film and what some of your early experiences either watching or creating cinema?
Totally. So my parents are both artists. My mom's a photographer, so I grew up with her in the dark room and kind of around her negatives and everything. And my dad is a painter and draws, and so I was raised in like a super artistic household. When did I start getting into film? I really wanted to act when I was young, and I had this like vision of someday winning an Oscar. And I started doing theater, and when I was maybe 12 or 13, I got an agent, and I started going on auditions. And because of my last name and because I was a little brown girl, my agent only sent me out for really, really typecasted, stereotyped roles and told me that no matter what I did, unless I was able to pull his quote, Salma Hayek, I would be the maid forever, or I would be always like typecasted in these roles. And finally, I got sent out for a role that was for border control. And half of my family is Mexican, and I quit my agency and started making movies. And I think, something that's really important to me in filmmaking is to have these worlds, create these universes that I want to see for myself, that I would love to live in, that, like, I don't have access to. And that's changing. You know, I think it's really exciting because I'm seeing that change a lot now. But from where I came from, that wasn't necessarily the case. So I think part of filmmaking for me, a huge part, is being able to create these roles and these worlds that exist kind of outside of our normal day-to-day life.
Yeah, I mean, that's horrifying that's an experience that an agent thought, an agent thought, like, I'm a big hotshot. I'm going to tell this kid, listen, you're going to be the maid forever, kid. This is who you are. Like, and I'm that makes makeout party so much more fun to watch because it feels rebellious. It feels like, as I said, it feels fluid. Anybody could inhabit these roles, and it's a celebration of that diverse nature of the city, as opposed to saying, this person has to be this role because XYZ. I feel like everybody could change around. And right. you would still get that fun, light product and so colorful.
Right. Well, cinema is dangerous. And I feel like people have been playing it safe for too long, whether it's Hollywood's fault. I'm not sure. But I think there's so many opportunities. Like, I love film because it gives it's the perfect medium to be rebellious and to kind of take on these crazy projects, because as much as the film itself is like this super fun, kind of bratty piece, it was also the experience of making it, and everything was shot DIY, guerrilla, like on location, just run and gun. Like, we made it for maybe $1,200. just really, really insane experience. And, like, everybody donated their time and energy.
And the locations, people.
Locations.
Chicago's
even, like,
an amazing
local
place.
Businesses.
Yeah.
Just, it was such a team effort that you know, it really does show how truly rebellious and game-changing cinema can be, because it's, you know, community-based, ultimately.
And now the agent that told you that you're just going to be typecast forever, he can kind of eat his own words, because you have created this movie that I can't believe that it was made for $1,200. Quick sidebar, I was imagining a much higher number, because it looks a lot better than that. But
yeah,
but I think that's proof that, like, if you have a strong community and a group of artists that are willing to work together, you can really create something that's visually stunning for no money. You know, it's about the team that you have, and it's about their willingness to put in the work and create something out of nothing.
And I think that the cultural statement that it makes is important as well, because, I mean, that's playing out how people are receptive to that, receptive to not only just diversity in race and sexuality and all of that, but it's playing out not only in the independent circuit, but on the, like, on the big studio circuit as well. Obviously, you see movies like Black Panther. It's destroying the box office. People to see... I actually haven't seen it yet. It's
My God, yeah.
Oh, my God. I've seen it twice.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, damn it. Now I need to go see Black Panther.
But you're absolutely right. It's these diverse stories that are ultimately happening at this level, at the DIY independent level, that are pushing upwards. I wanted to ask both of you, are there particular filmmakers that you find inspiring to this sort of process, especially with your DIY background? You know, watching this movie, I feel like there was almost a to beleaguer a point that's always been said, like, there was a Lynchian sort of feel to it, where it was so dreamlike, and there were just just off the top of my head, there were some shots where it was kind of, it had a vignette, sorry, it was like a fisheye lens vignette around it. And I'm just like, I feel like I'm watching this wild dream, and I want to stay asleep forever, because it's
and,
so much
and
fun.
And to piggyback off of that, a couple of my favorite things from the movie were Eve's character, when she's just like cutting her hand over the
sacrifice.
Just talking, like, writhing on the ground until she gets a call. And then the other one, which I wanted to actually ask you about, Emily, because I was a little disappointed with where this character's arc went. Poor Mambo King.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Mambo Kink. Yeah.
Or was it King or Kink?
Kink.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. Was that our stoner friend?
Yeah, that was the stoner friend forgot about the party.
Yep. I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's funny that you say Lynchian. Emily and I are both Aquarius, and he's also an Aquarius, so perhaps that's some of what you're picking up on there.
Yeah.
The dream world.
Born under the right sign. When it comes to Chicago, so Emily, you were here in Chicago. Now you're out in L.A. What do you feel the difference is in the filmmaking community?
So right now I'm kind of all over the place, kind of bouncing between Northern California, LA, and Chicago, and just
New York.
Not really locking down. Not really locking down too much right now. But you know, I feel like Chicago is super unique in the sense that the communities that I've encountered and have been lucky enough to be a part of here or there are super unmatched, in the sense that people are so willing and committed to do it for the art, to do it for the very sake of raising each other up and helping each other. My time, I was exclusively in LA last year for about a year, and my experience there, I actually ended up meeting a bunch of people from Chicago. There's a kind of running joke in LA that everyone loves people from Chicago because they're really hard workers. But it's true. You'd run into people on set who were from Chicago, and there's kind of this instant bond where you can, you know, you've experienced suffering from winter, and so you know what that's like, and these small things that kind of link you together. I feel like some other places I've been, specifically LA, is so about industry that sometimes I feel like the art gets lost. And you'll talk to people who are like, oh, yeah, I realized I moved here to be a director, but I haven't made a film in, you know, 4 years. And it's pretty hard to hear, and it's pretty scary. It's part of the reason why I had to, you know, uproot myself from just being in LA, because I really didn't want to get sucked into that that daily grind. I feel like Chicago really allows you to be an artist. The types of friendships and support that you can foster is pretty unmatched.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I came to Chicago for school to study acting and have stayed on for about 12 years now at this point. And I think a big reason why that is because I'm able to be a full-time freelance artist here, and I'm able to really focus on the art that I want to make and have people show up and help make it with me. I think there's so much less of... You can have sort of this, the cost of living here is such that you don't have to focus on, you know, making a ton of money all the time. And so you're able to really put a lot more emphasis on the kind of art that you want to make and helping other people around you, and supporting like the artistic community, as opposed to sort of putting all the emphasis on, oh my gosh, I've got to pay my bills and I've got to work this commercial job that I really don't believe in. You can kind of put your morals first as an artist in Chicago, which I think is really valuable and awesome.
So
in
your opinions, why do you think that is here in Chicago? Because I feel like this has been a recent development. This is something we talk about a lot on the show, is that Chicago is getting into this almost cultural zenith of art and people participating, while still keeping this kind of hardworking city of broad shoulders mentality and aesthetic. DIY is such the way to be here in Chicago. What is it about the city that engenders that sort of mentality?
I think for me, it's community. That would be the thing that jumps to mind. And I think that it has to do with the environment, right? It's a harsh environment. And I mean, at least in the wintertime. And that you really have to mean it. You have to say, like, I'm committing to this, and I'm going to go outside and I'm going to go to my friend's apartment and work on this piece of art. And you really have to commit to it when you're doing that. And it's this sense of community that allows all of this art to show up and, you know, thrive.
I think it's also like, you know, New York and LA are thought of such art epicenters because that's a lot of what the city has culturally identified, you know, put kind of on the map as like, oh, we're in New York, of course, we're fashion and, you know, film and et cetera, music, and LA as well with the film industry and art. But I feel like it's really difficult for artists in Chicago. Like, the city isn't very supportive, especially to struggling, independent, underground, DIY artists, artists from, like, diverse backgrounds, you know? And so with a city that isn't always very supportive, you still have these artists who are willing to or have to make art, have this drive to create, you know, against any other circumstance, that you're going to fight really hard to do that. And so I think part of what makes the communities here in Chicago so special is that there is, like Eve was saying, this survival, this like need to keep these, you know, DIY venues going, to keep these like queer art nights going, to, you know, keep this culture afloat in a city that's trying to repress them.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that I notice, particularly in Make Out Party, but in a lot of the films that we've seen in the past episodes that we've done, there's always, it's never want for authenticity. And something that audiences, modern audiences, value immensely is authenticity in the cinema that they're watching. And I think that some of the criticisms that I've read about for films that are being coming out of Hollywood and that are coming, you know, from New York, and TV shows that are coming from other places, is it's not really capturing something, that a story that hasn't been told before. And so that's why, I mean, I think I can speak for Tom and I both, that we're very grateful that we get to, you know, have this opportunity to be able to speak with these, you know, artists such as yourselves, who are, you know, going out there and trying to actually, you know, put their stories and experiences in different lights and in mm-hmm. interesting manners.
And the adversity is, you know, that's for me, that's the mother of invention and creativity, is that if someone's going to push back, then you always push back a little bit harder. And that's how you get something like Make Out Party that is just, it's so its own. It's so original. And it feels like, you know, something that we can hold on to. It feels tangible. I'm like, yeah, that came from Chicago. That came from a bunch of really amazing artists that got together and said, fuck it. Let's just do this. Let's make this happen.
Right, yeah. And I mean, that's where all the creativity comes from, is if you don't have the funds, you have to figure out how to do it in a different way. And and that way is duct tape.
Right.
stocks and duct tape are going up here in Chicago. All right. I want to move on to this world premiere that's coming up on the 30th and the 31st. It's co-presented with the Chicago Underground Film Fest and also Full Spectrum Features. And this is part of Chicago Underground Film Fest, their 25th anniversary, you
yeah,
said?
Yeah. They've been around for 25 years.
Oh, my gosh. Who would have ever expected that an underground film festival would just keep going like this, and it achieves such prominence, really. I mean, it's hard to jump into the film community here in Chicago without hearing about the Chicago Underground Film Fest. So this world premiere, it's the Friday and Saturday here at the end of March. Can you guys give us a little bit of a preview of what to expect? I hear it's going to be a huge party.
A carnival, even?
Yeah, there's definitely some carnival elements. It's going to be a super fun party. We are making, as we speak, these really fun carnival games that are sort of based around characters in the movie. So there'll be some games for people to play, and we're going to have food, some tamales and popsicles and drinks, obviously. And
basically, like a celebration of DIY filmmaking,
right.
And also an immersive event that kind of puts you in the world of the film. So like Eve was saying, some of these sets that were, or not sets, but like games we're building and actually transforming the space is going to be indicative of the film style.
Sort of like you can spend a night in the world of Make Out Parties. So, and
right,
there'll
right.
also be some live performances from really wonderful people.
And a kissing booth.
Mm-hmm, of course, a kissing
Naturally.
Booth. Yes. So and then we'll have some live performances, and then we're going to screen the film. And we've got a DJ dance party happening after that on Friday night. Alex White from the band White Mystery is DJing.
Oh, what?
Nice.
I love White Mystery.
Yeah.
So oh, my gosh.
That'll be really fun.
Keep it in Chicago for real.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Saturday night, we have Michael DeVille is performing, and Sarah Squirm, who's a hilarious comedian,
and
is
she
also...
She just got profiled in the Chicago Reader.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So some really
and
Chicago
then,
talent.
Vodes, who's an interdisciplinary artist, is also performing on Saturday, and then on Friday we have music from Co, and then one more. Oh, and
Magic
Snap is going to be doing Magic. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, now
so,
I'm sold.
Gonna be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun, and the performances. I mean, if you want to come both nights, they're going to be different. So each night will have its kind of own vibe, but the space is going to be all decked out, and just wear your craziest outfit, and we hope you can come and party with us.
For
it's gonna
sure.
be really fun.
Oh, also, both nights are going to be emceed by Alex Brelli, who's an amazing performer and is hilarious and so talented, and also makes a guest appearance, a cameo as Brenda the waitress.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So the
Brenda.
Yeah, the whole night will be hosted by Brenda. There's gonna be some
in character or
yes, Brenda's gonna be in character, and she's gonna be performing some dance and songs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're gonna get to see the theatrical side of Brenda.
Very nice.
It's gonna be
we also have some of the I believe Alien Greasers are going to be there on Saturday.
Mm-hmm, in costume.
You can suck some helium.
Should we be worried about that? Or?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're pretty fun to hang out with. They're kind of jerks sometimes, but I think if you can, you know, you can find the warm fuzziness inside of them.
Absolutely. Where is this going to be taking place?
It's hosted at VAM Studios.
Okay.
And we should note that you can. It's a private event, so you can only buy tickets ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You can get the tickets online. The link, I think, will be posted along with this podcast, and it'll be hosted at VAM Studios, but you have to get your tickets ahead of time, so make sure to do that, and the address will be revealed to you when you...
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
This is fun.
Now there's a mystery to go along with it.
Just, I want to ask real quickly, events are becoming more and more a staple of the Chicago film community. Like, really, almost every time I talk to someone, if they have a premiere going on, it's not just the premiere, maybe a cocktail hour. It is like, we're going to have live entertainment. We're going to have, you know, games. We're going to do this, that. What goes into making that all happen? This is huge. This sounds like a huge undertaking. Like, how did you guys put this all together?
A lot.
Eve and I both have experience in hosting and curating and creating DIY events.
Yeah, we both in our time have lived in DIY spaces and thrown events and curated things, and so this was sort of like pulling on those skills that we had from previous things that we've done, and trying to come up with a, you know, you can screen your film at a festival and it'll play in a shorts program at like 3 p.m. and you know it, and that's awesome and it's cool, but it, so much of the ethos of this film is this DIY fun, like, you know, scene that we wanted the premiere to reflect that and be an opportunity for the community that made the film to come out and celebrate and share it with Chicago. So we felt like that was a much better way.
Right, because, you know, we are submitting it to festivals. We just got into Athens International Film and Video Festival, which is really exciting. But ultimately, it's not about the laurels. You know, this film wasn't made for that sort of those sorts of accolades exclusively, right? It's really first and foremost a thank you, a love letter to the community. Like, it's really important to have these events that bring people together and celebrate, remind us like why we're actually doing this.
That was a big reason.
In a really fun way.
Yeah, and that was a big reason why we wanted to make sure that Chicago was really the first community to see the film. Mm-hmm. It's premiering here because this is the city that made it, and we want to say thank you.
Well, that is super fantastic. It's going to be on Friday, March 30th, and Saturday, March 31st. We're going to post the link on where to get tickets and all that good stuff. That's going to be on Facebook, NoCo Cinema Podcast, and Twitter as well. And hopefully this Instagram, if we can...
No, we'll go from No Post Cinema to NoCo Cinema on Instagram.
Thank you so much. Two amazing artists, writer and director Emily Esperanza and producer Eve Rydberg. Makeout Party, again, get to that world premiere. It's going to be a whale of a time. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. It was great
talking to you. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of No Coast Cinema. We'll be back next week as
we want to do. Yeah.
You know, maybe
as long as we're not sick or tired or, you know.
Yeah,
I will say
there will be a week I will be out. I will be in Scotland, rediscovering my roots and going up hills and things.
You only get one of those a year, Tom.
NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we'll see you all next week.